Now, our present subject for consideration is the Gandhian economics. It must be said at the outset that Gandhiji never formulated any economic theory. He formulated practical philosophy of life based on the eternal principles of truth and non-violence. And on that foundation, he formulated how the individual and social life should be organized. He said that is the only right kind of social order and individual life which makes for highest progress of mankind and their emancipation of mankind. Any other basis for life, any other basis of civilization would be impermanent and barren of fruits, and it invariably be violent. This is in a nutshell his basic philosophy. And it must also be said that what he formulated and worked out by in greatest detail how the social order is to be organized, especially in the Indian context, based on these two eternal principles of satya and ahimsa. I just lost the thread of thought. Okay. Okay, now I began with something, and then what I began with, I slipped from my mind, you know, memory problem. Yeah, this is the point I was trying to say. What he worked out is not new. It is the ancient Indian ideal, what a civilization should be, and the ancient Indian civilization attained that high perfection. And Gandhiji's whole philosophy and effort was to revive it and organize modern Indian society based on that ancient ideal. And people think it is very idealistic and impractical. On the contrary, and it is very evident, especially to students of theosophy, it is the most rational, it is the most appropriate and safest and the noblest and the highest foundation for civilization. As I already said, any other basis would be unfruitful. Not only unfruitful, but it is fraught with problems, disasters. Now, having said that, what did he mean by truth and non-violence? If we read Gandhiji's ideas, his writings, he means by truth all that is mentioned in the Upanishads. He meant by truth absolute truth, and also realization of absolute truth in the embodied existence in which we live, relativity. By absolute truth, as the ancient Indian religious thought philosophy says, it is the ultimate basis of the universe on which the whole universe is founded, the very foundations of the universe is built on absolute truth. It is eternal, changeless, true at all times, and it is the basis of all life. All life originates from it, sustains by it, and resolves into it, and all life ever tends towards it. And as the ancient Indian philosophy says, in the heart of all it ever presideth. And in Gandhiji's thinking, God is nothing but truth, and truth is God. There can't be anything higher than that. And where do we find truth and God? He says it is to be found in ourselves, in our highest and noblest aspirations and being. There God is to be found, and it is in all, and it is one, inclusive, excluding anyone, inclusive. All good and evil finally get resolved by it. In other words, universal brotherhood. This is the idea of truth, which he considered to be nothing but God. And by non-violence, he did not mean mere not killing of animals or insects. As long as we are in physical body, as long as we are living in this world, in this physical body, killing becomes necessary, unavoidable. But the only thing is that killing has to be minimal. When we breathe, thousands of lives get, you know, they perish. When we eat, we invariably have to kill the higher forms of life or lower forms of life. So that is not violence, non-violence. By non-violence, he meant to reduce violence to the basic minimum, absolute necessity. And then more than physical killing, he considered violence to be in our violence to be our negative emotions and the feeling and thoughts of hatred, revenge. These he considered to be real violence. If you have the intention of harming others, consciously or unconsciously, it is violence. When we have selfish intent, though we may not have any direct intention of hurting anyone, the very fact that we have excessive selfishness and greed, that itself is violence, because it invariably does injustice to others, harm others, and prevents their progress, and hurts ourselves. So by violence, he meant negative thoughts and negative emotions, such as selfishness, greed, lust, hatred, revenge. These are the most potent destructive forces of the animal nature of man. So this is to be completely tamed and made pure and non-violent. This is what he meant by non-violence. Now, these two are the basic principles of higher life. Now, our individual life and social life should be based on that. He worked that out, as already said, how a society should be and how a political and social economy should be. And in that sense, he didn't formulate any economic theory like the Western people do. Now, this also brings out a clear distinction between the Western thought and the ancient Indian thought, which Gandhiji expounded in Practical Ideal of Life. In the basic approach of the Western idea is analysis and working out the particular details and arriving at general principles. So they begin with the basic division of things, classification of things, analysis of things. So they begin with differentiation. But the ancient approach which Gandhiji expounded is not that. It begins with unity and descends into particulars. So begin with the general and eternal principles, and the life which we live has to be based on those principles, which means bringing about a transformation, readjustment and attuning of our individual and collective life in accordance with the higher truth. So this seems to be the basic idea of Gandhiji. So in that sense he didn't work out any particular economic theory. His idea of Indian village reconstruction and the socio-economic ideal was a part of his total scheme of human development, moral, spiritual and physical. And mind you, he never discounted physical development. But physical development and progress has to be in accordance with and subordinated to the principles of truth and nonviolence. Otherwise, the very development will be disastrous, as we are witnessing today. Now, J.C. Kumarappa, probably you have heard of his name, one of the very loyal and greatest Gandhians, a very trusted disciple of Gandhiji. Gandhiji asked him, when Gandhiji was old, Kumarappa was still young, and he understood, having worked with Gandhiji for long, he thoroughly understood the Gandhian practical idea of truth and nonviolence, and he himself was engaged in village reconstruction on Gandhian ideas. So Gandhiji asked him to continue the work and set a model for India's growth and development on these lines. So Kumarappa continued the work, and it is J.C. Kumarappa who wrote on the subject of Gandhian economics based on his understanding and experience gained by his own practical work in the field on these ideas. He wrote on Gandhian economics. So it is in this sense that we have to deal with the subject of Gandhian economics. So what I have done is, I have collected a few important ideas from Kumarappa's writings and just share with you, according to my own understanding, I'll share with you, and then we can consider this in detail. He says that there are five categories of economics, there are five kinds of economic activity. First is predatory and parasitic, which is violent. Example, tiger is predatory and parasitic. It doesn't produce, but it only consumes. It doesn't build any house, it lives in caves. It does no construction, no constructive activity. It only kills, and it's very violent. So economic system, one category of economic system is such, which is predatory and parasitic and violent. The second category is the same but less violent. Example, monkey. It is also predatory and parasitic. It picks up and that fruits and leaves and eats. Again, it only consumes, it doesn't produce, but less violent. You know, consider the same category of predatory and parasitic economy. It only consumes but does not produce. And third type is enterprising economy. In this enterprising economy, there is production as well as consumption. Example, agriculture. The agriculturist produces and he also consumes, but for himself. So this is twin activity of production and consumption goes on. There is the fourth category, gregarious economy. Example, bees. Bees collect honey from flowers and store them in the beehive. And their production is much more than their consumption. Gregarious economy. And fifth category is the mother economy. Mother economy, for instance, birds. Birds build as well as consume. They build the nest, tend the fledglings, young ones, feed them. And then they have no thought of any return. I am feeding these birds. In my later years, the birds will take care of me. No, it has no thought like that. And also it is mother economy in the sense, look at the mother, how she tends the children. She brings up the children, feeds them, clothes them, takes care of every of them. And without any thought of return, out of sheer love, she has no motive that later in my life the children will look after me. She has no such motive. So it is called mother economy or service economy. It is the highest kind of economy. Now, the first type, that is predatory, violent and parasitic. It is the economy of thieves and robbers. What does a robber do? He will rob you of your belongings and he produces nothing. He is predatory. And also he is a parasite of the society. The third type, which is the enterprising. In it the rights and duties are both combined. Rights and duties are combined. But it is self-centered. And fourth type, as already said, production exceeds consumption. And the fifth type, it is entirely service oriented without thought of reward. Now the third type, there is the rights and duties are mixed. That is the enterprising economy, as already said, is agriculture. Where do you find the example of fourth type, the gregarious type? There is an ancient Indian joint family system. Every member of the joint family would work, not for himself, but for the family as a whole. And his welfare is taken care of. Each individual, welfare of each individual member is taken care of by the collective benefit of the labor of all. Women folk labor in the house, men folk labor outside, and the fruits of the labor are collectively, distributively enjoyed by individual members. So this would be a gregarious economy. As already said, mother economy is the best example of the noblest kind. Where do you find the example of it? Now Gandhiji's idea was to bring this about in India. Now we read in the Bhagavad Gita, the portion of the Bhagavad Gita where Sri Krishna speaks of this mother economy, that each individual performs his action as a sacrifice for the well-being of all. This is the highest kind of individual and social life which takes mankind to highest progress. Now the first and the second kind, that is predatory and parasitic violent economy, violent degree of violence varies, it is imperialism. In it, destruction of life is imminent, suppression and subjugation of other people, their exploitation. Example, Now, the Western economic system is entirely predatory, parasitic and violent. Financial and monetary economy with one powerful nation controlling the monetary system of the world and subjugating other countries to a kind of a indirect colonial control is a typical example of predatory and violent economy. It gives immense physical and material benefits and riches to a few and plunges many into misery and poverty. So Gandhiji did not recommend any of this. If we carefully go through what Jesse Kumarappa has written on these five categories of economics, it throws such clear light and gives us insight into the moral causes which is producing so much of violence and exploitation and injustice in the world today. You get a clear insight into the want of moral principles in the modern economic system. Gandhiji says the whole mankind is tending towards, moving towards the mother economy. The whole civilization ultimately through long experience tend to move towards mother economy. That is service economy. Any other approach would be nothing but a jungle stage. And then relating this to caste, Gandhiji never believed in caste by birth, and he subscribed to the idea of caste as expounded in the Bhagavad Gita by one's action and by one's quality. One who lives for the benefit of others without thought of self is a Brahmana. Not otherwise. He may be considered in the social custom or traditions a Brahmin, but actually he is not. One who takes up a job in the government or say for a fat salary is a Shudra. And one who lives by tilling the land and enjoying the benefits of it himself, the enterprising economy, one who produces and sells and makes a living out of it, he produces and consumes both, he is a Vaishya. But if he does dishonest business, he tampers with the scales and weights and measures and cheats and make money, then that Vaishya, though following enterprising economy, he is tending towards robbery, predation and parasitic economy. So caste is based on actions and qualities, not on birth. So Gandhian ideal was to help society to evolve from the lower Shudra Nichha state in which one lives by predation to the Brahmin stage, which is lives for the benefit of all. When one does it, one's own benefit is automatically taken care of. And this transformation is only through moral and physical development. And in this scheme, rights completely disappear. Only duties remain. And that is the Brahmin stage. So his whole life's mission was to help society to evolve towards the Brahmin stage of economy. That is mother economy or service economy. He said, even if I have to wait for 1,000,000 years, I will continue to work for this towards this end. And mind you, this is not neither comprehended nor much value is given to it. because our current ideas are all based on separation and selfishness, and it is so ingrained in us that we don't the many do not appreciate the importance and the supreme value of the Gandhian system, and ultimately the final destiny of humanity is to go in that direction. So in the case of a parasitic and predatory economics, to service stage, when we transform towards the service stage, stage by stage, we find the violence, the degree of violence reducing and the non-violence increasing. This transformation brings about greater benefit. And then again, J.C. Kumarappa speaks of two kinds of resources. You know, all economic activity depends on the use of the material resources that one community has in its possession, has access to. There are two kinds of resources, as we all know. One is the unlimited resources like the sun, the water, the air. These are unlimited resources. So, and the ocean. How much of water you can take from Brahmaputra, or how much of water you can take from Ganges. We take one pot of water, some reduction takes place, but then the perennial flow makes up that shortage. So it is a perennial unlimited resource. And there is another kind of resource which is limited. Your coal, your oil, iron, these are all limited resources, minerals. So he calls it as current, he calls it a reserve economy. That is, reserve economy is economy which is based on the use of limited resources. And he calls that reservoir economy, which is based on limited resources, and he calls the economy which is based on perennial sources as current economy. Let's bear this terminology in mind. So resource economy would be based on limited resources like iron, coal, and so on and so forth. And when the economy is based on that, it invariably leads to competition, because resources are limited and wants are more, and there is invariably competition, there is invariably violence in it. Therefore, Gandhiji said, your economic activity should be based to a very minimal extent on the reserves, that is resources. And your economy should be based mostly on the current, the unlimited resources. And he said, before the Industrial Revolution, the whole of economy of every country, and especially in India, was on the lines of current economy, that is based on perennial source of the material resources. Like in England, they were using horse for plowing and transport. They were using coal for heating purposes. Fine. Though they were using limited resource, it was only for heating purpose, so it did not produce much violence. In India, as we know, cow and bullock and animals, household animals, and agriculture was a mainstay with unlimited resources, and therefore there was least violence and better equitable distribution and less of misery and poverty. And then he says, when the Industrial Revolution came, the steam was invented. The steam engine came into force, and the steam power was pressed into service. Then you see what happens, then coal had to be extracted to feed the steam engine, and then coal mining had to be done, right? And power generation to a great extent, and steam produced electrical power, and electrical power was used to run machines. And this brought about heavy dependence upon the limited resource, and invariably it throughout many artisans and workers who were dependent upon traditional methods of production out of employment, because the large scale industries came and displaced them from employment. So unemployment came. So from the stage of individual production through traditional means by individuals and families and village communities, large-scale mass production through machinery came into existence, and when these were thrown out of employment, they had to be employed only as workers to some extent in the mills, and the large majority had to find some other ways of living. So there was exploitation invariably involved. And not only that, from the stage, from the life of actual production, which was satisfying in terms of individual development, the individual had to work in the factory and become a slave of the machine, and loses his spiritual connection, and his whole life becomes automatic. He becomes an automaton. So there is a moral and a spiritual decline you see in the large scale production through machinery and mass exploitation of limited resources, and which limited resources also invariably lead to violence and war. On the other hand, when you rely upon current economy, there is permanence and non-violence. When you depend upon reserve economy or reservoir economy, which is based on limited resources, it is an economy of impermanence and violence. And another idea of Kumarappa on Gandhian economics, the more and more economic activity is directed towards production of basic needs of food, shelter and clothing for the masses, there is less violence and less exploitation. The more economic activity shifts towards luxuries and labor saving devices, there is more violence, and dependent upon luxury, there is lethargy, there is indolence, and there is decline in moral values, and society suffers. And when there is shift from the basic needs to these, the basic needs of many are deprived, and they go into poverty, and iniquity and injustice takes place. So this is a very clear and a perfectly evident fact which we have seen in the experience of last 200 years, what industrial revolution, how it has transformed whole society, apparently for material progress, but how it has destroyed the moral fabric and the spiritual values, and tending towards more and more exploitation, tending towards more and more violence. We have seen this. Now he says the test of any economic enterprise is this: will it lead to violence and war, or will it lead to peace or prosperity? So on that we have to make a choice. And in all this, the one unwavering principle which is forever true and stable is truth and non-violence. These are the sound principles of organization of any activity. This is the test. So when he speaks of it, it doesn't make any appeal to the civilization of today. It doesn't make any appeal to the civilization of today. But ultimately we have to come to that through bitter experience. And then again, see the method of production. We have already seen how the mother produces. What does the mother do? She gets the best material for her children, for her family. She puts her heart and soul in what she does and serves with love, right? And what does a confectioner or a mithai wala do? He also produces mithai or whatever. What's his motive? To make money. So he buys all the ingredients for sweets from the cheapest material, probably substandard material. Only substandard material you get is cheapest. And then he uses the least number of laborers to produce the thing, and then makes it attractive by adding some coloring material, some other ingredients which enhance the taste and sells. The consumer is attracted by it and eats, and invariably gets upset, health upset, and he transfers the money from the consumer's pocket to his pocket by unfair means. So Gandhiji says he's tending towards the robbery. He's a robber. And if this continues, the whole society will become thugs and thieves. The economy built on this, the whole society becomes thugs and thieves. Is that not so in Indian economy today? Don't you feel thugs and thieves everywhere? And then another important thing is moral and spiritual effects of this. Using one's hands, fingers, and ingenuity and resourcefulness, creativity of one's personality, one's higher faculties develop when when each individual becomes a productive unit, when each family becomes a productive unit. It is the evolution of the soul. It is a whole process of production for a living, for the community. It is a matter of self-expression and development of skills. Development of skill and artistic, so the whole work becomes an artistic, it takes on an artistic note, an artistic tenor. So senses and faculties develop in that direction. So it makes for evolution. So this is what the home or mother economy does. But on the contrary, we see how industrial economy production, it ultimately tends towards robbery and gangsterism. And the extreme of it is what's happening today. Each powerful nations will think it is their right to exploit and destroy others and for their own material growth and benefit, killing to get maximum benefit. Ultimately, make a small deviation from the moral principles of truth and nonviolence, and base your economic activity on the profit motive, material benefit, luxuries, consumption, you tend towards war, violence, etc. So he said, aim at self-sufficient economy, that is the mother economy. Exchange economy, on the other hand, exchange economy, money, when money is made the medium of exchange, when the money is made the medium of exchange, and the whole economy tend towards luxuries based on limited resources, that then money becomes an instrument of tyranny. It hides the true value of things. How? You take the tribal land is taken away for an industry, or a very productive farmland is taken away for industrial purpose, and the tribal forest land or the farmer's cultivable, productive, fertile land, monetary value is attached to it, and he is given that compensation, land value is given to compensation. But that money that he has received as compensation, can it ever measure the true value of the land that's taken away from him, the true value of the tribal land that's taken away from the tribals? It does not. So this is where money, the value, the monetary value attached to things is false. There is deception in it. Now those tribals, their wants are very simple. Their needs are very simple. They collected the roots and tubers and other things from the forest, it is enough for their food. They got enough to drink water and for their washing and watering water and living purposes, fresh water. And then whatever money they needed was sufficient because sale of whatever produce they wanted. Self-sufficient economy. So also the farmer. It's a self-sufficient economy. Can money compensation that given to him ever measure that the loss he has incurred? He can never measure that income. So he is given compensation, and what does he do with the money? And what happens to his life? He will have to labor in the factory, and how much of them can factory take? A few of them. And laboring the factory, he has lost his soul, right? And others become unemployed. And what does the industry do? Mass exploitation of limited resource, air pollution, water pollution. With the very water the people use becomes dirty, inconsumable. So see how violent it is, and it leads invariably to war and violence, social unrest, inequity. Is it not so? So the Gandhian way is the other way. He said the object of human activity is not our goal or final goal of economic and social life, is not production merely of material wealth. It is but physical needs, basic physical needs, and development of social, cultural, and spiritual and moral values. This is the truest development, which is non-violent, cooperative, mutually benefit, good of all, equitable, fraternal, and takes you to the highest goal of realization of truth. This is the vision that Gandhi had. And remarkably, HBB's view of modern civilization coincides perfectly with the Gandhian view. Perfectly with the Gandhian view. Mind you, the Gandhian view of socio-economic development can never bring about, can never be brought about unless and until there is a complete a change in the mind and heart, consciousness and understanding of the race mind takes place. Unless this awakening to spiritual truths takes place, the vision that Gandhiji had can never come into being. I will read a few passages from HBP's writing to show how remarkably identical her views of civilization and culture, how it coincided with Gandhiji's. See what she says. It is to its progress, material progress that we have achieved, of which we are very proud, that selfishness and materialism, the greatest curses of the nations, are due. And the latter will most surely lead to the annihilation of art and the appreciation of truly harmonious and the beautiful. This kind of a material progress is annihilation of art. Hitherto, materialism has only led to a universal tendency to unification on the material plane. Unification on the material plane. We have the European Union on the material plane. What is the outcome? Look at the plight of the European Union. It is disintegrating. Why? Based on material plane. Selfishness and greed. Predatory economy. Hitherto, materialism has only led to a universal tendency to unification on the material plane and a corresponding diversity on that of thought and spirit. It is this universal tendency which, by propelling humanity through its ambition and selfish greed to an incessant chase after wealth and obtaining at any price of the supposed blessings of this life, causes it to aspire, or rather gravitate, to one level, the lowest of all, the plane of empty appearance. Materialism and indifference to all save the selfish realization of wealth and power, and the overfeeding of nations and personal vanity have gradually led nations and men to almost entire oblivion of spiritual ideals, of the love of nature, to the correct appreciation of things. Like a hideous leprosy, our Western civilization has eaten its way through all the quarters of the globe and hardened the human heart. How true it is, how true. And then she quotes Manjunatha Shastra, a prophecy of the Manjunatha Shastra, which Gandhiji has been saying, the day you deviate from truth and non-violence, that will be your undoing, civilization is gone. Gandhiji is not the first time, you know, is that Gandhiji who expounded the first time, it's a very ancient Indian Ishatic ideal. When according to Manjunatha Sutra, I'm quoting from HBB, when according to Manjunatha Sutra, justice will have died, leaving as its successor blind law, and as its guru and guide selfishness, when wicked things and deeds will have to be regarded as meritorious, and holy actions as madness. This is the outcome. This is the outcome. Holy acts and acts will be considered as madness, and wickedness, wicked things and deeds will be regarded as meritorious. Look at the commentary of the affairs of the society and environment today in the regime of modern economic development. Beliefs are dying out. Divine life is mocked at. Art and genius, truth and justice are daily sacrificed to the insatiable mammon of the age, money grabbing. The artificial replaces everywhere the real. The false substitute the true. Not a sunny valley, not a shadowy groove left immaculate on the bosom of Mother Nature. We had a reading from the Bhagavad Gita where it says paraspara bhavayanta. Mutually assisting and benefiting one another, each other. You will attain the highest felicity. This comes from a realization of the brotherhood of humanity. Unless and until this universal brotherhood is not understood, till the fact of universal brotherhood is not realized, we will continue with this folly. What HBB says in the Key to Theosophy, when we neglect this, this is what happens. The neglect of social duty on one side is most closely connected with the stunted and arrested development on the other. In sociology, as in all branches of true science, the law of universal causation holds good. But this causation necessarily implies, as its logical outcome, that human solidarity on which Theosophy so strongly insists. It is the action of one, if the action of one reacts in the lives of all, and this is the true scientific idea, then it is only by all men becoming brothers and all women sisters, and by practicing in their daily lives true brotherhood and true sisterhood, that the real human solidarity, which lies at the root of elevation of the race, can ever be attained. It is this action and interaction, this true brotherhood and sisterhood, in which each shall live for all and all for each, which is one of the fundamental theosophical principles that every theosophist should be bound not only to preach but to carry it out in his or her individual life.